Ramjack Foundation Repair specializes in one thing, the science of foundation repair. If you notice cracks in your brick or sheetrock, a chimney pulling away, or have doors and windows that are misaligned, contact Ramjack for an on-site evaluation. We aren't roofers, part-time contractors, or plumbers. We're foundation repair specialists, trained to provide you with permanent, affordable solutions. Schedule your on-site evaluation today at ramjack.com. That's ramjack.com.
Welcome to Caregiver SOS On Air, presented by the WellMed Charitable Foundation, with nationally known gerontologist Carol Zerniel and award-winning veteran broadcaster Ron Aaron. This program provides health, wellness, and other information for caregivers who are vital to the health and well-being of so many people across our country. And now, here are your hosts, Ron Aaron and Carol Zerniel.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on Caregiver SOS On Air. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Carol Zerniel. Carol has a master's degree in social gerontology and 30 years experience in the field. She's the co-author of co-chair of the RAISE National Council on Caregiving and executive director of the WellMed Charitable Foundation. I will now engage my brain and welcome Carol. Nice to have you with us again, Carol. Important topic we're about to take up.
Well, it is, you know, and one of the things that I've really enjoyed seeing is in the caregiver space is really addressing the lived experience, the experience of different caregivers. We're not a monolithic group. We have, you know, different communities. And so Dr. Moss is going to be joining us to talk about African-American caregiving experience in the dementia space.
Well, let me introduce Dr. Karen Moss. She's an assistant professor of nursing and medicine at The Ohio State University. She's a registered nurse and nurse scientist who is focused on improving pain and advanced care planning outcomes by advancing palliative and end-of-life care for older adults living with dementia and for their family caregivers. She has her postdoctoral fellowship from Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, holds a doctor of philosophy in nursing from the University of Virginia, Charlottesville, Virginia, master's degree in nursing and from a clinical nurse leader program, University of Virginia in Charlottesville, and her BA in nursing from Adventist University in Orlando, Florida. And Dr. Moss, we are delighted to have you with us on Caregiver SOS On Air. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I am happy to be here.
What interested you in caregivers caring for dementia patients, especially in the African-American community? Are there special challenges?
There certainly are, and I wish I could tell you otherwise. So my interest in this area actually was born first out of my love for older adults. And I learned about older adulthood from my maternal grandmother, who did not have dementia, but passed away as a result of having colon cancer. But watching her death and dying experience and also the way my mom and her sisters and the rest of the family served as caregivers for her, death and dying, you know, became a part of my fascination, because of the way she died. You know, she was taken back to hospital, when it was time for her to die. And fast forward years later, her brother, who is my grand uncle, died at home peacefully in his sleep. And so when I had the opportunity to decide what I would like to focus on for my research, I went back to my clinical practice, of course, my family roots as well, and brought together this notion of the lack of preparation that I often saw in the clinical space as an ICU nurse for many years. And then also this notion that Black and African American individuals are twice more likely, right, to develop dementia, and just observing the struggles that these caregivers face, why not bring these concepts together and try to help out?
Do we know why there's a double risk of developing dementia in the African American community?
Well, there are several theories out there, and the most notable is, you know, one of the forms of dementia, if you think about vascular dementia, oftentimes there's, you know, it can result from having mini strokes in the brain. And so with higher rates of conditions like diabetes and high blood pressure that put individuals at risk for having strokes, vascular dementia can, or the likelihood for conditions such as vascular dementia can be increased. And if we take it a step back further, when we think about what sorts of conditions contribute to the development of these sorts of chronic illnesses, you know, we have to be cognizant of the impacts of racism on the Black and African American population, stemming as far back as slavery, and the weight that people still walk around that can cause these chronic illnesses to come on board and stay on board, and people suffer the long-term impacts, negative impacts as a result.
Well, and a lot of people don't realize that Blacks and Hispanics do have higher rates of dementia, and that would include probably many in the medical community not making that recognition.
That is very true. And I will, you know, go as far to say that as astounding as the numbers are, it's vastly underreported.
Underreported and under-researched. Yes. You know, when we look at what we know about dementia and we know about brain health, so often it didn't include women originally, but it certainly did not include people of color.
Let's pick the conversation up in a moment, but I want to let folks know who may have just joined us. You're listening to Caregiver SOS On Air. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our special guest, Dr. Karen Moss, and Carol Zernial, our co-host, is here as well. And Dr. Moss, when you take a look at a dementia in the African-American community and caregivers with the responsibility of caring for that care recipient, are there ways in which you can support what they're doing, and what are those ways?
That's a great question, and I love that. So one of the ways that we, my team and I, have landed on, not of our own, but with help from the community, from these individuals who are impacted, we have used their expertise. So we connected with current and former caregivers to figure out how can we best support you while you're in the caregiving role, or for in the case of our former caregivers, when you were a caregiver, how would you have liked to be supported? And one of the things that we've learned is that the needs are vast. And one of the things that we've come up with so far is a program, or in the scientific world, we call it an intervention, but it's a program called Peer to Care. And what Peer to Care is a peer support program for Black and African American dementia family caregivers to come together in a way that's culturally sensitive, it's flexible, non-judgmental. It's a virtual connection, virtual only connection for 6 months. And we require 5 video calls, 10 or more emails, text messages, or phone calls over the course of the 6 months. And our mentors receive training before they're paired with their mentee. And this training helps them to understand what their role as a mentor is and what it isn't, because they're not expected to be healthcare experts. What they are experts of their lived experience, and that's what we have them share with the person that they are mentoring during this process.
What are some of the needs that caregivers shared with you?
So as it relates to the program, the and beyond, the need to be connected with someone who has the same lived experience, somebody who they can share their struggles with without being judged. So for example, as a caregiver, I am caring for a loved one, and I have a conversation with a high school friend who I may share with them that, oh, by the way, you know, my mom lives with me, or I live with my mom. She's in her 90s. And the high school friend might think, oh, that's wonderful. You're so blessed to have your mom with you. So the caregiver will stop short of saying, but by the way, mom doesn't even know who I am anymore, right? And it's hard. It sucks, actually. So they get to share, they wanted this ability to share these challenges that they're experiencing and struggling with, oftentimes internally, with somebody who can say, you know what? It's okay to say it sucks. It's okay to say it's hard. It's okay to say you're tired. You know, it's okay to cry. So that's one of the main things we heard from our current caregivers. Our former caregivers, who end up being our mentors, told us that they want to give back. They want to be in research. They want to help people who are currently caregiving.
Yeah, you know, what you said really resonated with me in a couple of ways. Number one is so many times our well-intended family members are not always able to step back and be that non-judgmental support that we're really looking for. Because there's always, you know, isn't there a better way to do this? And maybe I let me tell you what's the better way to do it. And we don't do it on purpose. But I think it's really great for those that are listening that are family members is to remember that withholding that judgment and accepting what the caregiver is doing and it's the best they can do is really important. And the other is we always hear that people feel like they're the only ones who have gone through this. Yes. And so having a connection with someone, A, who has gone through it, and B, who is from your community, who, you know, is not talking about not getting to go maybe on a global whirlwind tour or something, they're giving up to take care of mom this year. I mean, we want to be respectful. And we heard that from a caregiver saying that they went to a support group. They didn't see anyone that looked like them. And the experiences just didn't mean anything to them. And they felt out of place.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree. And, you know, so we connect our peers on different levels, right? For different reasons, you know, the caregiving role. So if they're spousal, we try to connect them with spousal because, you know, that's a very unique experience. Daughters-in-laws, gender identity is another component that we were very, very intentional about connecting on. We also ask things like hobbies and that sort of stuff. So there's a bit of a objective pairing, and then there's the subjective. You know, we get to know our mentors and our mentees, and you know, as things come together, we're able to say, okay, this person might be really good with this one, and you know, so far so good. So far so good.
So yeah. When the 6 months is up, do you find that some of them continue that relationship even after the official program has ended?
Well, actually, you will have to stay tuned to find out the answer to that because the program is still ongoing. None of our peers have met the 6 month mark as yet. Most of them, we're about halfway through with getting them to the 3 month mark. We still have 100% retention. And I will also add that we had a very fast enrollment. The slots filled up quickly and we essentially had to turn people away, as part of that. But we have plans for the next step already. So yeah.
I want to find out more about the program in just a moment, but we're going to do a little business at our end. This is Caregiver SOS on Air. Our special guest, Dr. Karen Moss. Karen is at the Ohio State University in Columbus, Ohio, assistant professor of nursing and medicine, and is managing an incredible program providing care, support, and encouragement for caregivers dealing with dementia patients in the African-American community. I'm Ron Aaron, along with our co-host, Carol Zernial. You're listening to Caregiver SOS on Air. Well, thank you so much for listening to Caregiver SOS on Air. We're delighted to have you with us. We come to you every week with a discussion of an issue, a problem, some accomplishments involved in caregiving with more than 60 million caregivers across this country, but most thinking they are the Lone Rangers. We try to bring you the latest information and help that can make that job easier and more manageable. Caregiver SOS on Air takes a look at trends across this country. We provide tips on how to be a better caregiver, and most importantly, where you can go for help. On Caregiver SOS on Air, we try to give you what you need to make that caregiving manageable and to provide you with the help that can make your life easier. I'm Ron Aaron. Carol Zernial and I are delighted to co-host this program, and we're thrilled you've joined us on the award-winning Caregiver SOS on Air podcast, available everywhere, brought to you by WellMed Charitable Foundation.
Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
Really good to see you once again. Hello, friend.
Hello, friend.
Really good to see you once again.
Well, thank you so much for sticking with us on the award-winning Caregiver SOS on Air. We're available over the air on the radio as well as on podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find Caregiver SOS on Air. At least that's the plan. Our guest today, Dr. Karen Moss. Dr. Moss is an assistant professor of nursing and medicine at The Ohio State University. Our co-host, Carol Zernial, is here. I'm Ron Aaron. You were telling us, Karen, about what sounds like a marvelous program you're running, providing mentors and support for caregivers in the African-American community dealing with recipients who may have dementia. We're talking about what kind of needs they express to you. What else have they asked for?
Well, believe it or not, our caregivers in our study, they want to participate in research. They want to help out. They want to be able to give back. And that's something, you know, we typically don't necessarily hear coming from the Black and African American community. It's typically, you know, they don't necessarily participate in research. But our participants told us that they want to be involved in research and they want to continue to be in future research studies as well. They also shared with us this ability to be connected with resources. There's so much out there that they tend to not know about, things that can help to, you know, ease the burden of caregiving. So this notion of being connected with somebody who has gone through it, again, as a potential way of them being able to learn about. And so what we've even seen in our intervention and within Pair to Care thus far, you know, mentors will share about different resources that they have connected or they connected to when they were caring for their loved one. And so it's so much more global. And I'll be honest with you, you know, thinking about who I am at core, the palliative care, the end of life person at heart, we went in with into the study, making sure that our mentors bring palliative and end of life care experiences, because we were, you know, highly focused on helping with advanced care planning and that sort of thing. And that has been a big part of it, but it ended up being much more even global than that. So they wanted more. And so we had to, you know, because we ask the questions, right? We listen, and then we turn around and give them more of what they ask for, rather than being narrowly focused.
For those who may not know, Karen, what are the differences between palliative care and end-of-life care?
Yeah, so palliative care is symptom management. And when we think about symptoms, those are the things that we often can't see. We see the manifestation of it, right? If my tummy hurts, or if I'm in pain, I cry. But that pain that I'm experiencing, you can't visualize that. You see how I react as a result of having it. So palliative care is symptom management. You do not have to be near the end of life to benefit from palliative care services. It can be, you know, that a younger person nowhere near the end of life may have a broken thigh bone and have issues with managing pain as a result of that. Palliative care services can help with that. Pain management, nausea, you know, those sort of symptoms. Palliative care trained experts are superb at having conversations. They're expert communicators. And they help a lot with having these end-of-life type discussions, but there's so much more than that. End-of-life care. So when we think of end-of-life care, we think oftentimes of hospice services. That can include palliative care support, but it doesn't have to. A lot of our palliative care trained specialists do work in hospice services. So hospice is focused on end of life care, but palliative care does not have to include end of life. It's more so symptom management. And as a matter of fact, I'll just say one thing. There is a strong push, a lean towards involving palliative care services for individuals living with dementia early on to help with even management of the condition, management of the symptoms of dementia that can be quite prevalent, particularly dependent on the different types.
Well, I'm curious on the end of life care. You talked about two relatives, right? One who died in the hospital and one who died at home. What do you want caregivers to know about an end of life experience?
So, as hard as the reality is, at this moment, dementia remains a fatal condition. And therefore, well, I'll actually step back a little bit and say that death is something that we all must face at one point in time. We all will face our own demise. And to not plan for it to the extent that we can, right? You know, there can be the sudden deaths and that sort of thing. But to the extent that we can plan for as much as we can, what the end of our lives looks like. That's whether or not you decide you want to document, have the conversations with your loved ones, document your wishes in the form of an advanced directive, such as a living will. Remember that you don't have to pay money or hire an attorney to have these things documented. You can talk to your healthcare provider. and have these documents completed. So it doesn't always come with a price tag. It's something I would want our caregivers to know. It is very important that we have these conversations on what things can look like. If we can, while the person living with dementia is able to contribute to these discussions, and if we're beyond that, if that's not able to happen, you can still do it collectively with healthcare providers and other family members, so that whenever the time comes, the burden is potentially a little bit less heavy because of the unknowns. So I would love for every caregiver out there to think about, you know, having these conversations, think about how we can choose quality over quantity as their loved ones' disease progresses, and, you know, involve the right set of providers as much as possible to help with the decision making early on. And then I have to also say, I just love this work of caregiving, because it's not just, you know, doing this for the person living with dementia. I'm also very much interested in the caregivers caring for themselves in this way too, by documenting their own wishes and what they would want for the end of their lives.
Well, I'm curious, does any of your research show with dementia, a lot of times a person will reach a point, it's just not feasible to be cared for at home anymore because of problem behaviors or maybe just late stage where they have to be physically lifted and transferred and all of that. Does the research show what if placement is different in residential care facilities in the African American community, or is it about the same?
Yeah, so my particular research don't focus on, you know, placement of long-term care, but what we do know from the broader body of literature that is out there is that Black and African Americans, like a lot of other minoritized racial and ethnic groups, do have a tendency to prefer to care for their loved ones in their homes. And while that is fine and well, we know that there are certain scenarios where that makes that impossible for caregivers in the home to continue to do that in a way that's safe for the person living with the disease, and also safe for the person who's caring for them, or persons, you know, because even in numbers, it's still difficult and it still can become safe. And so actually, peer-to-care is really good about that as well, because it's a very hard transition decision point for families, regardless of who you are, but particularly as we think about our Black and African American families, when you think about context, right, with healthcare systems and the mistrust that is, by the way, founded, right, because of things that happened in history. And so helping them to navigate that. So when we go back to the point made earlier about, you know, what the needs are, is hearing from, right, somebody who is of this same demographic, who can say, you know what, despite all of the challenges that exist in healthcare and healthcare systems, we were able to navigate this space and provide, be able to get safe long-term care in a facility for our loved one that ended up working out really well and help them to live a better quality of life, and also help us as the caregivers to live a better quality of life for the time that we were able to have left with them.
Now, Karen, before we run out of time, I'm curious, for those who are listening who don't live in Columbus, Ohio, who live all over the country and around the world, for Pair to Care, what's your dream and fantasy for this program? And can it be adopted in other communities as you build it out?
Oh, my. So this gets me even more so excited. So, you know, the goal for Pair to Care is to expand to a national platform. So, you know, we've already, even with just having our focus here in the Columbus area, because this is just the very first level of testing. Peer to care is a baby, right? It has to grow. And we want, we are intentionally going slow in order to go fast later. We want to design it, and we want to design it well, so that whether it's expanding to different regions of the country or taking it to the national level, we will have built a model that is sustainable, that is translatable or transferable to other, whether it's disease states or racial ethnic groups, or, you know, potentially we could remove the racial component. You know, if somebody says, don't necessarily care to be paired with somebody who is of the same race, but just has the dementia caregiving experience. We want to be open to that too. But for now, of course, we're testing it in the Black and African American community. It was developed the way it was formed and shaped with Black and African American individuals intentionally. But we know that our goal is to expand. We want to put peer to care on steroids and make sure that caregivers across the country are being able to be helped and potentially even internationally.
Last question. We're almost out of time. How can folks find out more? You have a website they can go to?
I do have a faculty page. So if you just Google Dr. Karen Moss or Karen Moss, PhDRN, I will come up. Or if you Google the FamCare Laboratory, which is the Family Caregiver Community Research Laboratory, which is where my team and I live and do our work, they will be able to Google FamCare Lab, and we should come up as well.
Perfect.
On Google. Yes.
Thank you. I Googled you and you are everywhere. It was wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen Moss at The Ohio State University on Caregiver SOS On Air. For Carol Zernial, I'm Ron Aaron. We will talk with you soon on the award-winning Caregiver SOS On Air.
Executive producers for Caregiver SOS On Air are Carol Zernial and Ron Aaron. Our associate producer is Christy Romero. I'm Ron Aaron. We'll see you next week on Caregiver SOS On Air.
You've been listening to Caregiver SOS On Air, an exclusive presentation of the WellMed Charitable Foundation. We welcome emails with suggestions and comments on this program at radio@wellmed.net. Join co-hosts Carol Zernial and Ron Aaron next week for more on caregiving, improving the health and well-being of caregivers and their care recipients everywhere. For more on caregiving and podcasts of our programs, visit caregiversos.org.
Some people take the straight path in life, but at Arizona State University, we respect your twists and turns. They make our online students more driven to excel in their professional lives. That's why our personalized suite of services empowers you with innovative resources and staff that sticks with you.
Make your next turn with one of our 300-plus programs at ASU, number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years.
Visit us at asuonline.asu.edu to learn more.